This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stefan Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. So my question for you today, Samantha, is, are you a fan of whodunits, as my friend once accidentally called them, the whodunit?
Yes. It's according to what the storyline is and what the dunnit is. But typically, yes, I do. Because I'm also the same person who will be wherever. I think we did this a couple of times. And I would whisper it to whomever else is sitting next to me to give my theories the entire time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm somebody who likes, I really love trying to figure things out and guess endings. But I'm also someone who will get really caught up and people at the end will ask, like, who did you think it was? And if it was a good movie, book, whatever, I might have never had a theory. I might have just been so caught up and just like, wow, well, it could be this person, this person, this person, this person. And, you know, never really had, which I do love. And that's one of my favorite things about Scream is anyone who's watched that with me knows is I love how throughout the whole movie, they kind of goofily are like, see, it could be this person. Look at this very obvious shot and clue we're hanging on.
Wait, so then have you seen Clue?
I have seen Clue, but I feel like I've never given it the attention it deserves. I feel like there's certain scenes, as you know, Samantha, I'm really bad at watching movies, actually.
Yes.
Because I usually am doing something else. So there's certain scenes, like I remember the ending really well.
Which ending?
Well, exactly. I remember that kind of like unfolding of the various ways it could have ended and then the ending. And then certain other bits and pieces, but I should rewatch it for sure because it seemed really fun.
It's one of my favorite movies still.
Yeah.
Definitely problematic in some things, but it's still great for me.
Have you ever played one of those murder mystery games where everyone gets the card? You know, and then you're playing a character, and as the night goes on, you like figure out who the person who's playing the murderer. You might not know at first, but then you figure out that it's you, and then everyone's trying to guess who it is.
No, I'm still trying to make you play Among Us. And I think it's kind of along those lines, except not card form.
Well, it's like a little, I mean, you don't have to do it, but it's very acty.
Yeah.
Like it's usually, you know, sit on a train in England and I don't know. I've played it a couple times and I feel like halfway in, people sort of give up when I've done it. It was fun. It was my kind of thing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite episodes of The Office as well.
Yes. It's a good episode of The Office.
Yeah, when Michael says to Creed, like, sir, there has been a murder and you are the suspect. And Creed's like, okay, let me just go get some things at my desk. And you see him like peeling out of the parking lot.
It is really good.
Yes.
I do declare.
Which is funny because we're talking about another whodunit with a Southern accent that is brilliant, in my opinion.
It's true.
Because this is a very special episode of Feminist Movie Friday because it's Wednesday, I think. So this is a very special Feminist Movie Wednesday.
What?
Yep. On Knives Out, which has only been out for a year. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want to be spoiled, somehow you've miraculously not been spoiled, skip this one. Go watch it. It's on Amazon Prime. It's available. And I love it. It's very, very good. I adore this movie. I even did a movie crush on it, on the podcast Movie Crush, if you want to go check that out. And I remember very vividly the first time I saw it with my mom. And it did come out around Thanksgiving.
Right, which is why we chose this movie. Because we were trying to figure out, is there any really good Thanksgiving Day movies? And we had some struggles.
Yes. Yes, we did. And you know what else I struggled on? Because we also tried to find a good movie about Native American women. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't easy.
Right.
So if anyone's got any suggestions around that, please, please, please send them our way. But yeah, this is, well, it's not, it feels very Thanksgiving-y because it is a big family gathering where people fight a lot, which unfortunately is what I think of when I think of Thanksgiving. Sounds terrible. But yeah, I saw it around Thanksgiving last year with my mom. And the difference between seeing this movie in a small, rural, very conservative town versus I saw it in Atlanta two or three times, wow. Because it is a very political movie. Well, not very political, but there's like an outright discussion of politics and Trumpism in the middle of it. And there are a lot of themes around immigration specifically in it. But my favorite part of seeing it with my mom is we get all the way to the end and the credits are rolling. She turns to me, audibly gasps, and says, "That was Daniel Craig?" Who she has a bit of a crush on, and I guess she just was so wrapped up in it, and the accent went through her. I don't know.
I mean, that is correct. I will say, because I knew who he was immediately upon a glance, like, obviously, mm-hmm. This is Daniel Craig, I started kind of, like, squirming a little bit, knowing that he was about to do a whole accent, and I was like, oh, dude, this English person is going to do this antebellum accent, which is really awful in any way. Every time I see someone trying to do an accent, it's so over the top and distracting that I can't enjoy whatever I'm watching. Walking Dead, for a prime example. Mm-hmm. But he does a great job, and you do get caught up in being like, oh, he's no longer James Bond. He is this doofy investigator.
Yeah, and almost everyone in this movie is playing one, and it looks like they're having the time of their lives, which I love, because a lot of these actors are cast against type, but they're almost caricatures. Like, they're like right on the verge of being a caricature. His accent is definitely over the top, but I love it, and I want anything. Just I'm so glad there's a sequel. I just want more of the accent. Oh. it was definitely the last movie I watched in person with a decent-sized group of friends before quarantine and pandemic. And Samantha and I, we saw it in theaters.
Yes. This is one of those movies I kept going over to Annie going, this is who it is. Oh, that is who it is. It's absolutely this person.
Yes. And our friend Caroline was with us. And Caroline stuck around because I love doing a good double feature. And we saw the newest Star Wars together, Rise of Skywalker. And it was a great day. I remember it fondly. But, all right, let's talk about this movie. So, Knives Out, it's a 2019 American murder mystery whodunit film written and directed by Rian Johnson. The ensemble cast includes Daniel Craig, Ana de Armas, Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Toni Collette, Michael Shannon, Don Johnson, Lakeith Stanfield, Catherine Langford, Christopher Plummer, Jaden Martell, Ricky Lindholm, Kay Callan, Edie Patterson, and Frank Oz. Wow. So a lot of people in it. It was well reviewed by both critics and audiences, and it's an homage to murder mysteries, everything from Clue to true crime to Agatha Christie to Murder, She Wrote. It's also a modern update on the genre with Twitter, Instagram, Juul, and arguments about Trump. All this is integrated into it.
Yeah, I think they did a good job because it was such huge casting that they were able to bring in different elements of what was happening today, which seemed kind of chaotic. The plot follows the Thrombey family after the death of the patriarch Harlan Thrombey, Christopher Plummer, whom I love, in his super gothic home in modern-day New England by apparent suicide. And detectives are called in to interview the family and the employees that worked for Harlan about his recent 85th birthday celebration. Enter Benoit Blanc, played by beloved Daniel Craig, a famous private detective who has been hired by a mysterious unknown client to investigate the death of Harlan. Through a series of interviews, we learn more about the Thrombey family's dysfunction, issues, and of course, privilege, as well as potential motives for murder since Harlan spent the day before his death cleaning house, quote unquote.
Yes. The last person interviewed is Harlan's nurse, friend, and confidant, Marta Cabrera, who cannot lie without throwing up. She tells a lie. She pukes. Yes, you heard that correctly. I actually have a friend who really can't watch vomiting in movies, so she really wants to see this, but she's like, I need to know precisely the parts to skip.
I think I rewatched it again with my partner, and I had to fast forward it because I was like, nope.
That was pretty gnarly, too. It's like got corn in it. Sorry.
Yeah.
So Marta flashes back to the night of the party as they're asking her about it. And it's revealed that through a medication mix-up, Marta accidentally gave Harlan a massive fatal overdose. And the ambulance is going to take too long to arrive to save Harlan's life. And the life-saving drug naloxone is missing. So Harlan decides to protect Marta and her family. Her mother is an illegal immigrant. And to do this, he decides he's going to slit his own throat, make it look like suicide. Marta protests, but Harlan insists. He tells Marta exactly what to do to rule herself out as a suspect, which Marta does, mostly successfully. Marta makes it through the interview without arousing suspicion, so we think.
And a reminder, I don't know if you... Did you mention that Harlan was a mystery novelist?
No, I didn't. Yeah, he's a very productive, wealthy mystery novelist. Yeah.
So this is why he has the perfect plan for her to get away with murder.
Yes, exactly.
So Blanc requests that Marta accompany him on his investigation because he trusts her kind heart and her insight, and also because she can't lie.
Yep.
And she realizes she leaves a few pieces of evidence behind. Mud, surveillance video, broken trellis, which she attempts to hide to varying success. And I do also love the dog in this movie because it kind of tells on her, essentially. And I feel like that's what my dog would do as well. Peaches, I think, would do the same to me.
Oh, yeah, Peaches would. I love the, like, jump, the smash focuses on the dog's face as if the dog is, like... I don't know, involved or something. I love
yes,
it.
Yes, I do too. All of this. And the family all gathers for the reading of the will and the big reveal. Harlan has cut them all out and has left everything, house money, publishing company, to Marta. Bum, bum, bum. And immediately, most of the family completely turns on her, accusing her of having sex with Harlan or of being a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is after, I mean, they've multiple times said, you're a part of the family, you're a part of the family, we're going to take care of you. Immediately turns on her.
I also love that they kept saying, we wanted to invite you to the funeral, but, you know, I was voted out. Each and every single one of them.
Every single one of them said it, and you know that they definitely probably didn't even think of her. like, later, oh, yeah.
Oops.
So Marta is literally kind of being chased out of the house, and she escapes with Ransom, the black sheep grandson played by Chris Evans. And she tells Ransom everything. She tells him the truth. He agrees to help her on the condition that he gets his share of the inheritance. The rest of the family, including Meg, Harlan's young feminist granddaughter, resort to various methods to convince Marta to renounce the inheritance. And Meg and Marta were probably the closest in this family outside of Harlan. Marta is blackmailed by a mysterious source. And on her way to meet the blackmailer, there's a car chase, an explosion at the medical lab that was analyzing Harlan's blood. Ransom is arrested. And he's implicated by the story of Harlan's mother, who, yes, is alive. And she, some evidence she provided pointed the finger at Ransom. Marta goes to meet the blackmailer, only to discover it is the housekeeper, Fran, who has Marta's missing medical bag, and Fran has also overdosed.
Mm-hmm. And Fran's a big key to this as well. She's kind of the background character you don't think about until she reappears. You're like, oh, yeah. Hey, there you are. Mm-hmm. And I do love that Ransom actually tricks her into telling the truth by overfeeding her food that was going to make her sick if she tries to lie. Like, it would be really bad.
Yeah, it was a bowl of, like, beans and sausage. it was going to be gross.
It was going to be real gross. So, unable to let Fran die, Marta calls an ambulance and confesses everything to Blanc. So, she insists she tells the family before she's arrested, and the Slayer Rule, a law that requires anyone involved, even accidentally in the murder of someone that left something to them, cannot receive that inheritance. So, she would have to return the inheritance to the family. Before she can do this, she realizes that Fran, who had the backup blood toxicology, she knew where she put it. So she hands it to Blanc after finding it. And just as she's about to confess, Blanc stops her, telling off the family for their awful behavior towards Marta and informs them he is officially ruling the case as suicide and the case is closed.
So that is one of my favorite lines in the movie. He says the case is closed, and he says it so dramatically, the case is closed, and then he, like, storms out. I love that so much, and I say it in conversation a lot, and people look at me like, what are you doing? Knives out, come on. So a very confused Marta and equally confused police detectives listen as Blanc unravels the whole story. This is the, like, oh, here come, I'm going to tell you how it all played out part of these whodunits, revealing that Ransom, who he had brought into the room, was behind the whole thing and did intend to murder Harlan and frame Marta after he found out that Harlan was cutting them all out of the will and leaving everything to Marta by switching the labels on the medication that she gave him every night. However, because Marta is a good nurse, she naturally switched them back due to the slight differences in weight and viscosity, meaning Harlan was totally fine when he cut his own throat. His blood tox report came back totally normal. Ransom was also behind the explosion at the medical center to get rid of the blood sample, Fran's deadly injection, and the mysterious client. He was the client that contacted Blanc in the first place. Marta lies to him and gets him to confess to Fran's murder. Then she pukes all over his face. It's really gross. And then Ransom tries to kill her with a knife, but turns out the knife is a fake. He can't tell the difference between a real knife and a prop, just as Harlan said in the very beginning, and Ransom is arrested. Linda, who's played by Jamie Lee Curtis, realizes her husband is cheating on her, and the family stands outside and watches Marta on the balcony drinking from a mug that says, "My house," as she looks down on them.
Right. I think one of my favorite parts of that is because at the very beginning scene when Harlan is discovered dead, that mug is the thing that you concentrate on, that they focus in on that. But now she has that mug, as well as the fact that the note that is given to Linda, she always talked about how her and her dad had a special way of communicating, and no one knew what that was. And the whole reason that Don Johnson's motive for murder was that he was going to tell on him for cheating.
Yeah.
And then he saw him having a note, and when he looked at it, it was blank, so he didn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Turns out it was invisible ink.
Ah, I love it so much. Those are such great payoffs. It's one of the best payoffs I've ever seen of, like, the mug at the beginning and the end. Because you're not expecting it. But then when you see it, you're like, yes!
There it is.
There it is. So that's the plot, which is kind of, tricky to describe a plot of a murder mystery movie, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of moving pieces. But we do want to talk about some themes. But first, we're going to pause for a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So one of the biggest themes throughout this is immigration and the idea of the American dream, the self-made person. And a good whodunit relies on the audience's prejudices. The fun of these stories is largely in playing with or against type, and that's how you can keep people guessing throughout. So there's this running joke in the movie that the family appreciates Marta's hard work, but they can't remember the country she's from. They frequently get it wrong. Nobody says the same country. They always say, yeah, that she's one of the family, that they'll take care of her, even though they didn't invite her to the funeral. You can count on us, Walt says when he says they want to take care of her financially, which all completely reverses when she gets the inheritance, when she is the one in power. She even says to Meg, I'm going to take care of you. I'll take care of you. And that's not enough. And I've had this discussion with friends before. Do you think they would have taken care of her financially?
Well, no. Obviously, when they found out she was getting this inheritance, they threatened to deport them. They purposely used that. So you've got to understand, if they're going to that level, that automatically they see her as a non-person and she would have been forgotten just as she was forgotten during the funeral.
Yeah. I think they might have started giving her something, but it would have been like almost really small. And if she did anything they didn't like, or they eventually kind of stopped doing it, like, what is she going to do, you know?
Yeah, and
they're
honestly,
just going to cut her off.
Yeah, I don't know who would. Like, if you look at the individual characters, I don't think any of them actually would, because they were all kind of financially dumb in themselves.
Yeah.
So I don't think they would. And then, of course, we wanted to talk about Knives Out as a feminist movie, not because of the director, obviously, or the writer, but because there's a lot of implications as we talk about female roles in a household. And then we talk about privilege and all of that. So it just kind of like culminated to, well, we could talk about this within this movie and that within this movie. And a part of that conversation is how she is known as the help. And just kind of like how you said, they couldn't remember what country she is from. This is that connotation of othering. Oh, she's not from here. She's a foreigner, whatever. And that's that same level of disproportionate idealism in this whole narrative. And throughout the film, the family and various others refer to Marta as the help. And it's interesting to see that, because Fran, who is not a woman of color, is known as Fran.
Right. And I mean, it's one of the very first things they all say about her when they say, oh, Marta, she's from Ecuador, or oh, Marta, she's from, like, Yeah. That is the thing they say. And then I was also thinking about, I think they do that because they think that makes them look like they're woke or something. Like, see, we're, you know, we're nice to this person from another country.
Like, right.
I don't know.
It's a whole thing. And a reminder, she's a nurse. She's not even a part of the staff. She is paid as a professional to come and be a caretaker for him. And again, even though Fran is an actual housekeeper, she's an employee of the household, she's still referred as Fran. And this is not only a commentary on how we view immigrations and immigrants, women and people doing essential work, but also a way to subvert the classic murder mystery trope, the butler or the maid or the help did it, which again, still makes me laugh because she is not any of those things. And when Marta walks through the hair salon as if she's invisible, I don't know what you were talking about that one.
So remember when she goes to pick up for the blackmail, she walks into that hair salon and she's not there. Like, she just walks so confidently past them and they don't look at her. Nobody looks at her second glance.
Right.
And she's doing that so Blanc won't know where she went in, so she can go out the back entrance and come in the other way. But
right. Which I say, I get the commentary, but also Ana de Armas is one of the most beautiful women in the world, and I can't imagine people ignoring her. So I also have a hard time with that. Because beauty in itself and her being light skin as well, I think it's an advantage. So I don't completely, I'm like, you need a different type of woman, but she's a great actress. She does a great job. But I'm just saying, it's kind of like when you have Scarlett Johansson being pinned as, you know, a common, you know, swarthy girl. And you're like, that's not how that would go. But also it turning marginalized folks against each other, Marta and Fran, which actually wasn't the narrative, but that's what you think in the whole of the movie.
Yeah. That's what Ransom is trying to do.
Right.
But he does not succeed because he doesn't know how to play to make a beautiful pattern. Right. Meaning that Marta is a nice, good person who's not going to let someone die so she can get money, as opposed to Ransom. Ransom is an ass to both of them. But he's not nice to Fran either. I mean, clearly he tried to kill her.
Right. He did kill her. Oh, no, he didn't kill her.
No, he did.
Oh, he did kill her. Yeah. He did kill her.
She lied. So let's talk about that mug for a second, that my house. Because that's also something running throughout this, is this idea of their ancestral home, which I say in heavy quotes. And I definitely read it as a metaphor for the United States. When Ransom goes on his angry, entitled, self-righteous speech about their ancestral home, Blanc laughs aloud right at him, reminding him that Harlan purchased the house in the 80s. All of this is similar to America's history of colonization at large and the selective memory around it. The whole idea of American exceptionalism is wrapped up in there, too, of this is our ancestral home and you'll never take it. And you're like, but... Right. You got it in the 80s.
Like. Right. Which is a big commentary as we speak about who has the rights to this country and the lands and such as, and the profiting and all of that. So that's really timely, of course. And the stories we tell ourselves, the memory shifting depending on who is telling the story. It is pretty funny because you have Toni Collette's character talking about how wonderful her relationship was with him and how everything was perfect and her business was perfect and her child is perfect. and that they are deserving of their wealth because they worked hard, which is not true at all. One's like failing in the business. The other one is, she's doing okay. We don't quite know. But it was, I think she's the only one that actually had some claim. Jamie Lee Curtis's character only had a little bit of claim of actually putting things together as opposed to being handed something.
But she did get $1 million loan.
Right. Which again,
her business.
We've heard many argue that is not that much apparently. And you know, still scraping the bottom.
Well, please give it my way then. If it's not no big deal to you, I'll take it.
And then of course they constantly describe Marta as a hard worker, which yes, is really passive aggressive speak of she is lower class. But of course, just because she's a hard worker doesn't mean she deserves their fortune. It's theirs. It's their right.
Yeah, I mean, they're such hypocrites, of course, because, you know, they say, well, we built our business from the ground up or whatever it is, so we deserve this.
Right.
But when she's a hard worker, as the, in their own words, but when she gets the fortune that they, essentially the same thing, Harlan handed them money, that they totally reverse. Like, right. No, wait.
Yes, she must have done something dirty to get this money.
Exactly. Exactly. And I do think that the casting of Captain America as the villain was really interesting because there is this commentary around America's history. And having him, I don't know. I don't know if they did it on purpose or not. I imagine that they did. But having him be this entitled just asshole who thinks the world owes him something, who's never worked. They say in the movie, he's the only one that's actually never even tried to really work and just thinks he's deserving of this money and is willing to do these horrible things and think nothing of it. And in fact, kind of be proud of it, of mm-hmm. like, I can do this and get away with it because I have a good lawyer and I have money. And seeing his real colors at the end and then getting vomited all over.
All right. But I don't think he thinks that he deserves it. I think he just wants it. That's the difference between him and the rest of the family, which is why they hate each other. They all put on pretense and he does not. He's just like, no, I'm his grandson. Of course I deserve it. It's the family. I've had to deal with the family. That's what it is. This is how it's supposed to be. Let me get it. And I don't think, and of course he's probably worked harder at this than he has at anything else in his life. But he's willing to go there. But also he's willing to mock the fact that he doesn't care about any of the rest of them because they are too fake. Like, I think he does a little more open face. Mm-hmm. Like, he's definitely manipulative and does all of these sneaky things in the background of getting the money. But he's the one that's the loudest about, like, no, we did. This is not ancestral. He's not, you know, like, he's like, you are not a good person. You're not a good person. I know what you did. Like, he laughs at the face of everybody trying to justify why they should have the money. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't justify it. He's just like, nah, it's mine. End of story. So I think it's the more like stark difference between him and the family in that way. One's pretense, one doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting. I think that's the whole reason it worked for me that I didn't guess it was him, because I did believe he would totally be like, yeah, I'm taking my cut and they're not. And I was actually kind of surprised that he was determined to get it back for them. But whatever. And I was thinking about this. I have been thinking about this for a long time, this iconifying of this type of character, of this jerk. And I feel like Tony Stark is a great example. I know that might make some people mad, but I feel like people like him because he's kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. And he's a good guy. I have a lot of thoughts about Tony Stark. But anyway, I do feel like we've built this character, especially in the United States, that is this dude who's kind of mean and we love him for it, like, because he's being himself, and that kind of translates into our politics now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Maybe we should come back and do a whole thing on that.
Right. Speaking of politics.
Yes.
The family in itself, as we enter the holidays, I think we can all kind of appreciate the landmines we have when it comes to politics. I think that's big key in most of our conversations about dreading going home if there is a political difference, especially. I think one of the biggest things I thought was almost way too perfect was the blonde housewife who has not spoken throughout. But then the one thing she wants to shout out about is about the immigrations and then coming here illegally and taking over the country, which I've had more and more incidents with white women. And I'm like, what? And it was almost too perfect to see her lose it. And of course, it is played by a comedian. And so she delivers it so perfectly.
Like
the rage, the faux rage.
Yeah. And I love how she has that moment. Like, she's worked herself up. And then she immediately kind of folds and then awkwardly walks away. I mean, I'm sure all of us can relate. They're having this fight. And even Don Johnson's character says, you know, I don't like him. He's an asshole. But maybe that's what we needed.
Right.
So there's the thing we were just talking about right there. And like you said earlier, as they're conducting these interviews about this party, the 85th birthday party, depending on the character, they remember things differently. Like, they remember who was by Harlan when the cake was there differently.
Right.
And they all have this memory of, like, beckoning Marta over, like, smiling warmly. She's one of the family. And this is the part where you find out, oh, they were calling her over to ask her about, like, doing it right, immigrating correctly.
Right.
And using her basically as a prop in their political argument.
Which I find is the number one defense in people where you're like, you know, I have friends. I have friends who are not from this country, and they did it right. And you sit there looking at them like, what's right? I don't, what?
Yep.
And then also just try to use her as a prop in general. It's like handing her a plate as though that's her job. Again, she's a nurse.
She is a nurse. Oh, and he does it so casually too. Like, here's my plate. Oh, gosh, that whole scene. That was the tensest in the movie theater when I was in the small town, Delonica.
I bet. Because they've had this moment.
Yep, exactly. Something else we wanted to talk about is the dismissal of Nana, Great Nana. So she is Harlan's mother, and she is quite old, and she's regularly just dismissed, like completely dismissed, even though it turns out she is the key witness, or at least one of the key witnesses. Because of that, none of the family even offered their condolences to her after her son's death. So she shares what she knows with Blanc, who didn't dismiss what she had to say and was kind to her, sat with her. And it turned out to be very important to him figuring out the whole thing. And in fact, she gives a rather demonic chuckle that I love when Blanc is like, Marta's keeping the inheritance, the case is closed. And she kind of laughs. I love that.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those moments where you and I talked about women are so dismissed anyway, but then when age comes into play and how little they're regarded, especially in American culture versus other cultures. And here, she is definitely a side figure and then dismissed because she is elderly, quote, like, and then the idea that she must not be in her right mind.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jeez, I love her too. And I do love that there are several generations of women in this movie. Marta's family, you've got her sister and her mom, who I also love them too. And then within, you've just got all these generations, which is unfortunately still kind of rare, but it was nice to see. Well, we do have some more for you, listeners. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. It's a literal pro, and it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yeah, and we wanted to talk about, which is one of my favorite. I love Toni Collette almost in everything, just to put that out there. So I'm a huge fan. But her character, who is Joni. And her whole, like, self-help. I love it. And of course, they had to make digs. And whether it's a bad thing or a good thing, whether you believe in it, all of these things. But she does have that flam, the negative flam, which, again, reflects Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop. And I know there's a lot of commentary happening about that. And there's also the whole Instagram influencer aspect to her, as well as her like very centering and like, listening of the
her. Kind of new agey.
Which we're not dinging.
No, her
caricature of it is kind of delightful, especially when she does it as a obvious money-making scheme rather than in that, something that she actually believes in.
Yeah, I mean, she feels very, I mean, it's making fun of the very specific, I think, entitled white lady aspect of this, of her just kind of brazenly saying these things that you don't think she really believes, but she's trying to make money off of it.
And apparently she's not that great at it. That's the other part.
No, exactly, because she has been stealing from Harlan. $100,000 a year for 4 years. So, yeah, she's not very good. I do love the scene where she's like saying that, oh, they're my family. They support me. I'm simultaneously held and supported by them. Or she's like dancing on Jamie Lee Curtis. And Jamie Lee Curtis is like, no, not having
it. Right. And I do also love that this whole good feel and we're going to do these things and trying to be, I'm fine. Everything's fine. We're all lovely family. The way she gets her daughter, who is the supposed woke girl, is by saying, hey, our lifestyle is about to go away. The school that you like so much, you're not going to be able to go there. And so because they go into the selfish motivations, it was able to take the one ally.
Yeah, and I did want to throw in a line before we move on from Joni's whole self-help thing, is there is a part in the movie where right before the will is read, the entire family thinks that only ransom has been cut out. And they're all kind of like, oh, this is going to be good for you. And she says, in the most, like, overly sincere voice, nothing good is ever easy. And you know, like, immediately when she's the one that's looking at not having any money, never mind. Those words go out the window. But that, I mean, that's a part of the whole thing, too, is they just clearly have been telling themselves that they worked so hard, it wasn't easy for them. But it was. It was. So we did want to talk about performative activism. So like you said, Meg, who is Joni's daughter, is Marta's one ally, in pretty heavy quotes, in this family after Harlan has died. And she's described as the crypto-pseudo-Marxist post-deconstructural feminist by Jamie Lee Curtis's character. And she's always aggressively defending Marta, whether Marta wants her to or not. But also, yeah, turns her back on her under pressure from her family and at the revelation that her schooling and her lifestyle will go away without the inheritance. And again, this is, we've had a lot of conversations around this, of this idea of performative activism, of doing the social media post and kind of nothing else. And that, you know, that's kind of diluting the issue more. It's more that, like, you're only doing it for one specific reason, to look or perform this one way.
Right.
And it's easy to do when you're well off.
Right. And when you're not nothing, being questioned.
Exactly. Exactly. When there's nothing that you have to give up, really, to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Then on the other side, you have the, quote, literal Nazi, who's played by Jaden Martell, and I believe was cast because he looks a lot alike one of the pictures of the Tiki Torch protesters. I think I read that somewhere. But he's like the young teenage troll. And some people think that this character is a direct critique on the backlash Rian Johnson got from angry trolls after The Last Jedi, the Star Wars movie he directed that fanboys largely hated. I bet that's true, but I bet it's also a critique just on this very specific troll internet person in general.
Right. I think it also comes to the fact that this large family has a lot of divisiveness within it, and you have all of these very different characters that have to mm-hmm. represent all of what he sees in society. And I think mm-hmm. that's what it is too.
Yeah, I mean, it is, if you're going to really run with this movie as sort of a metaphor for America, then you do have all these aspects of like wealth gone wrong or what it could look like. And you see them play out in all these various aspects that we recognize. We like know this. I mean, with Gwyneth Paltrow, I mean, you know, you can make correlations between these characters and things we see in society. And then I did want to talk about, lastly, this whole aspect of kindness that's at the heart of this movie, at the donut hole, if you will. I heard a lot of people describing this movie as a whodunit with kindness at its heart and being genuine. Marta says at the very beginning, "I'm not playing to beat you. I'm playing to create a beautiful pattern," when her and Harlan are playing Go, which I'd never heard of.
Neither.
And that all comes back at the end when Blanc is having his big, like, reveal and he says, you know, she beat you by not playing your game, outwitting you once again, which I love.
I also wonder, because you have to... I love Christopher Plummer in this movie, and I've seen him in quite a few things, and there's a little bit of... I feel like he is trying to correct the mistakes that he made with his children through mm-hmm. Marta as well. And so mm-hmm. that's a big question too about his kindness. Like, what is the motivation? It's not necessarily just giving. It's definitely reciprocity for his own children. And again, this movie also subverts the traditional whodunit, because at the heart of it is this young, sweet girl, Marta. The only suspect who is truly a good, kind person. But it also happens to be the apparent murderer. Whoops. So that we, the audience, which happens a lot, spend a good chunk of this movie hoping she doesn't get caught, or hoping for a better revelation at the end, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that was the great part, because I think in the first, you know, 20 minutes, you know she did it.
Right.
And
honestly,
you're like,
that's the biggest shock of the movie to me, that they told you immediately she did it.
Yeah, and you're like, oh no, please, I don't want her to get caught. And that's what made it so different from a lot of other murder mysteries I've seen. I don't know that I've ever seen one where I was so actively like, please, don't figure it out. And I did want to put in here, I found one article that criticized the narrative of the good immigrant in this, but I think it's more of a criticism of that narrative around doing things the right way. Immigrants, they get the job done, which is a line that Don Johnson says in the movie. He says it not to the black detective he's talking to, but to the white detective kind of in the back. And a lot of people have compared that to the Get Out line. I would have voted for Obama a third time if I could. So this, like, immigrants get the job done, but you don't have to do that. And then, as we've said, this the importance of hard work. When you inherited a lot of money and benefit from society's prejudices, and that they believe they've earned from the ground up, they built from the ground up, which they haven't, and the American dream at large, as in it's all well and good when it's working or perceived to be working for you, then you succeeded in the American dream. Almost all the family have been cheating the system. They've been stealing or mooching off of Harlan, things that they would flip against. These are the arguments that they would use against immigrants, and that we do here against immigrants who are actually not doing that. They're not mooching and they're not stealing, but this privileged white family is.
Right.
Yeah. But I do think more representation always, because, you know, if we had that, I'm not sure we would be having this conversation right now.
Right.
Yeah.
I think there's a whole big conversation, too, of the metaphor, the idea that the patriarch is giving away his money to someone who, again, to in their mind, didn't earn it.
Right.
Which is that same claim that that's what assistance and welfare is, giving money to people who don't deserve it because they don't want to work for it, which is a whole lot of BS in itself, which we know is not true and is not as beneficial as people want to make it out to be. Yeah. And then with that, it's the weaponizing of empathy. They're always trying to convince her of what Harlan wanted, which we see that today. We see that today in the election and being told repeatedly, be kind to Republicans, they're having a hard time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're seeing all of these threats to workers and not being told to be kind to the workers who are who are trying to make sure things are working in place. Yeah, they do this despite the will and what she knew he wanted, as well as the fact that she didn't ask for it. She didn't want it. She was actually very confused too and more concerned about whether or not she killed the man.
Yeah. That really stuck out with me when I rewatched this last night. How many times you're like, you know, it's what he would have wanted. But he wrote down what he wanted in the will.
Right.
And just trying to really prey on her empathy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I went into a whole messy soliloquy is not the right word, but I was writing about the American dream last night and I deleted it from the outline, but I was trying to work out my thoughts on just how it can be turned against people. And we've talked about that briefly in other episodes and just how there's such this story and this, a lot of people really believe it, that if I work hard enough, I will get there. But we know that that's not always true. There's all these obstacles and systems in place that really systemically hold people back. Right. You can work so hard and barely be making it, be able to survive in this country. So I deleted it because it was a bit of a mess, but perhaps I'll return.
When you go that deep in the idea of the American dream, you can't do it in two sentences. A.
Yes.
B. I think there's a lot to be said that the American dream has changed over the course of time, and therefore the American dream is not a dream, but several concepts that have fallen apart and the giant be remade. So there's a lot to be said about that in itself. And also, especially when we look at who is the one that's saying that they deserve this.
Yeah.
Who is the one that can actually have the claim of, well, you deserve it and you don't. And that's a whole conversation in itself.
Yeah. I think what I was trying to get to the bottom of in my own mind is just how it has been also weaponized in a very particular way to make people feel guilty that they're not succeeding, even though they're working so hard. Anyway, I remember when you first suggested this, Samantha, I was like, I don't know, we'll have enough to say about Knives Out when it comes to feminism, but here we are.
I told you, they're such good characters. And I don't think we dug into all of them.
No, we didn't.
Definitely went in and out as much as we could. But if you look at the individual characters, I think they were written really well, played out really well. I'm looking forward to the second one as well, which I can't imagine how that's going to go. So...
me either. That's a lot to live up to. But yes, that brings us to the end of this very special Feminist Movie Wednesday. We would love to know what you're streaming, what your suggestions are for our next Feminist Movie Friday or Wednesday. We'll see how it all plays out. And you can send those suggestions to stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at @StuffOneNeverToldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard.
Oh, thanks.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.